Pacific Beer Chat. I'm Cam.
Hi, I'm Leaf.
And Leaf, in case you aren't aware, is one of the minds, I guess the main mind behind Hired Guns Creative, who you probably have seen their artwork, but you may not know them.
Yeah. So one of the minds, not the main mind.
One of the minds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 So I'm one of the partners, and my business partner is Richard Hatter, and he is the creative director and lead designer. I can't design anything. Can't design my way out of a paper bag. I run the business side of the business, and handle new business development, and just sort of oversee things. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, let's start with a beer.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because, you know, we've been empty-handed for about 3 minutes already.
So. Yeah, starting to feel it.
So we'll start with a local one here. We're recording in Nanaimo. I'm out for work. And we're going to start with Longwood's Cranberry Rhubarb Sour from their Sour Series.
Yeah, it just came out this week, last week. Anyway, fairly recently.
So 4.2% alcohol, probably pretty low IBU given it's a sour, but cranberry and rhubarb seems like a pretty good combo. So
yeah, these guys are good with fruit. I've always been really impressed ever since Buried Alive, since we did that. They were actually our first packaging design client in the beer industry, and Buried Alive was, I think, the second can we did for them. So if you haven't had that one, give it a shot.
Well, there we go. That kind of leads into one of my first questions was, how did everything start for you guys?
So, we started our company in 2008. At the time, I was doing web development and working for a local company here, which shall not be named. Nothing to do with beer. And I met a guy and wound up working with him on some projects at that job. That's Richard. And we started moonlighting after a while, doing our own thing. Richard had a background in all sorts of visual design, not just web stuff. So branding, packaging, print, all sorts of stuff like that. But we started doing some moonlighting. A few months into that, our boss found out and fired both of us.
Oh, lovely.
Yep. Honestly, it was a little traumatic, but it was the best thing that could have ever happened to us, because we had our company set up at that point. So we started back at the beginning there, we were a web design company primarily, because that's what I knew.
Yeah.
And we were designing anything for anybody, any kind of business that came in the doors that we could, you know, whatever we could do to keep the lights on. A couple years in, we started to experiment with the idea of specialization, and we came across wineries as a potential industry that we could target. We saw sort of an industry that really appreciated design but didn't actually have that great web design. So we put some effort into targeting wineries and landed a few clients, and those turned into a few more clients, and eventually started to develop a little bit of a niche there. But after a while, we kind of switched over to beer because it was a better creative fit for us. I found the wine industry, when it comes to design, was really conservative.
Yeah.
Whereas craft beer guys, they just let us go crazy.
Fair enough.
As you've seen.
Oh, yeah. And I love it.
Yeah, me too. So, sorry.
No, beer. No, I was going to say, let's take a little pause and talk about the beer. Not that I'm not enjoying the story here, but let's take a sip.
It's great. Not too sour, which is kind of where I'm at in life right now.
No, that's that's like a perfect fall seasonal sour. It's not overly tart, but it has that cranberry kick that kind of reminds you of the fall flavors.
Yep. And that rhubarb that I love.
Yeah, that rhubarb you kind of get too in it. Yes. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, I'm loving this. This is great. It's not as kind of bright and that lemon puckering forward sour that you kind of expect from a summer seasonal.
Yep.
It's a little more subdued, but it's really nice. That rhubarb lingers for just the right amount of time.
Yeah.
The cranberry comes in up front with that tartness.
I'm kind of finding that the just where I'm at right now with sours, like, the mellower ones kind of suit me better these days.
Yeah, you don't have to break out the Tums.
That's right. I don't feel like the enamel's getting peeled off my teeth.
Yeah. You
know, so I guess I'm just getting old. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. So then you got started in beer.
Yeah, so got started in beer. We actually did the Driftwood Brewing website back when they opened. 2008.
Yeah.
But it would be years before we got to actually work on their packaging for them. Before that, I'm getting my chronology messed up.
Oh, no problem.
Longwood was the first brewery that came to us and asked us to do some packaging design work for them.
Okay.
So this was when they moved, when they opened up the production brewery. Aside from just the brew pub that they'd had for many years.
Yes.
I can't remember, 10 or 11 years or something like that. Harley set up the production brewery in Nanaimo and needed some packaging, finally. You know, and he went into, at that point, he went into the tall cans.
Yeah.
The, like, 568, 563, I can't remember the exact milliliters on
them. Yeah, they were kind of an awkward, it was like a 24-ounce.
Yeah, can. That's right, the proper pint.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was 22 or 24 ounce.
I think it was 24. So in some ways he was a little bit ahead of the canning trend there, but just missed the 473s by just a bit. But we did 5 beers for him. And 4 of those are still on the market right now, which is awesome.
Yeah.
One of those actually did really well for us as a company, which was Stoutnik.
Yeah.
That started in a bomber. For years, it was just in a bomber. And it was like this black frosted bomber with a black label that we had this great foil on and like a blind embossed story told in Morse code.
Yeah.
All around the label.
I very much remember that label. That, man, the first time I saw that on a shelf, I had to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny. Part of it's that foil. It's called holographic or holofoil.
And yeah.
It, like, as you move it around, the light hits it differently. So as you walk through a store, it kind of twinkles at you.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get motion into beer packaging very much.
Yeah.
But that one did well for us. We won a bunch of different, like, international awards off of that, which was pretty cool. So after Longwood, we slowly started working with other breweries. And over the space of about 3 to 4 years, narrowed down our business's focus so that we were only working with alcohol, which is where we are today.
Yeah.
For the most part,
we
do a little bit of cannabis stuff, a little bit of non-alcoholic beverage work, but it's pretty much
bread and butter is
a little bit of wine.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so you get into packaging. And then, obviously, you get your, I guess, rebrand with Driftwood was a little bit after that?
Yeah, so the rebrand with Driftwood was in, 2013? I should know this. 2014? It was in 2014.
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah, because it was like 6 years after they opened.
Yeah.
They had seen the stuff that we were doing with Longwood and a couple other clients, and they were like, yeah, you know what, we're ready to step it up a notch with our packaging. So they came to us and we set up a deal with them to redo everything at the rate of about 1 label per month, which took almost 2 years because we were also dealing with new beers they were releasing
coming up
with labels throughout that whole time period as well. So
yeah.
Started with Sartori Harvest because it was just that time of year.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at the Driftwood stuff now, you can kind of see that one in some ways looks like we're testing the water a bit.
That was the first cut label that I remember.
The first with the die cut. Yeah,
yes.
That's right. And it's not that crazy of a die cut, you know, compared to what came after.
Yeah, but it kind of set the trend
it
where
totally
it's like,
did.
Can we get away with this?
Yeah.
Will it work?
Yeah, will it work? Like, does it look good and does it work on the bottling line?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a huge thing.
Oh, yeah, because if it's put on by a machine, you have pretty big constraints there.
Yeah, so those are expensive lessons that you learn when you design
a
company. Not the Sartori Harvest was a problem, really, but other labels for other people have been. So, but the die cut thing came to be become a signature for Driftwood.
Yes.
You know, a different, there was, at that time, there was a new die cut technology called magnetic dies. You know, like, this is total insider baseball design.
Hey, that's print fine. Geek stuff, get as deep as you want.
magnetic dies were just, had become available from a printing company here in BC. And they were so much cheaper than the traditional dies, you know, like $500 or $600 for a new die.
Yeah.
And at that point, when you're doing runs the size Driftwood was doing, it's like, yes, you can convince these guys that, you know, it's worth it doing a new die.
Of course.
Not thousands of dollars like it used to be in the old days. So, but that whole concept of having weird, crazy die cuts for Driftwood has become kind of a signature on their bombers. It did for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
And there's been some really weird die cuts.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like that Raised by Wolves one is super weird.
I love that beer.
Yeah, big fan of that one. I'm trying to think of the other really weird ones. That even the old Cellar Dweller one's pretty weird.
Oh, yeah.
The skeleton with that one arm sticking off the side of the bottle.
And the 40-pounder. Or 20-pounder.
20-pounder. With the hole in the middle.
Yeah, with the hole in the middle is the one that sticks out for me.
I'm so happy they went for that knockout, because it just... it's
that knockout is just so iconic for
and
me.
And you don't see it on beer labels.
Yeah.
Right? Again, probably because it's an added expense.
Yeah, of course. But
Yeah, it's fun. So, I mean, while we were doing all that stuff for them, we were also doing a fair bit of work in the spirits. And the distilleries, I found, have much higher budgets when it comes to labels and packaging, right? Because they got way bigger margins.
Yeah.
So they're like, yeah, you want to put the gin in a box? Like scotch? Sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
Right? And so we could do fun stuff with those guys and then take some of that stuff we learned there and put it onto integrate it more into the beer.
Yeah, so it's a continual evolution.
Always.
From...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I gotta say, going back to Driftwood's labels, my favorite label that you guys do easily is the Son of the Morning, just because I'm a massive metalhead.
Nice.
But if I ever start a band, I'm getting you guys to design all my stuff, man.
That's nice. That's sweet. I love that one so much. And I was so happy this year to see that Satan made it back onto the ingredients
list.
It's
back?
It's back.
I was wondering why he left.
Well, he's back. Yeah, no, that one is such a, I don't even know what to say about that one.
I mean, whenever I see somebody wearing one of the baseball tees, I just throw the horns to them and give them a nod. And you know, it's a tight-knit group for sure.
Yeah,
when you know.
yeah. That deck of cards that we did for them, they're on the second edition. So that one that I just gave you is the second printing.
Okay.
And we actually got to correct one of the really small things that we didn't notice when we did the first one, which was Son of the Morning was the fours for each of the suits. So like the four of hearts, I think it was the fours. Anyway,
and
we corrected that
six
because it should have been the sixes.
Yeah.
So you can have three sixes. That's the kind of thing you don't notice till you actually sit down and play the cards once. You're like, oh, crap.
So anybody with the first printing, there you go. You got a collector's edition.
Yeah, totally.
the less metal version of the card deck.
Yeah.
But then cannabis products, too. I've kind of gone through your portfolio a little bit. How's that market to design for? Is it a little bit more constrained because of all the packaging?
Yeah, it really is. We tried to push into that earlier on when it was still like a gray market in Canada and found it pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
We found the clients to be really flaky. You know,
no way.
Like, guy would just halfway through a project, somebody just disappear for 3 months off the grid, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of actually pretty good work that never saw the light of day during
that. So you learned to get your money in advance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. And since the regulations, since it's become legalized and the regulations have come in, it's been super restrictive in Canada for what you can do, to the point where there's very little work for us, honestly. I mean,
the packaging restrictions.
Yeah.
First of all, everything is overpackaged to oblivion.
Super overpackaged. It's really frustrating.
For a country, and especially in BC, where we're trying to reduce packaging, reduce waste.
It's bad.
So counterintuitive to that.
Yeah. And I hope that will change. I'm not sure how or when. But
I understand, in a way, the plain packaging laws, but at the same time, this isn't cigarettes. And
Yep. But so, we're doing a bit more of that out of the States lately, but in Canada, it's just not as much. It's just not as much there for us, which is kind of a bummer, because we were hoping there would be a lot more there.
Well, and a lot of your focus seems to be on local companies and helping out. I know you do a lot of North American, and I'm sure you've done some other stuff outside of North America, but
yeah,
I know,
a bit here and there, yep.
I know your main focus, at least from stuff I've seen, is all BC or North American based.
Yeah, it's growing more and more in the States every year. This year, even with all the weirdness, it's still following that trend for us. But I mean, to be honest, as a company that's really specialized, like we are,
yeah,
there's only so many clients in BC that we could ever hope to work with, right?
Yeah.
And half of those, or a third of those, already have a guy.
Yeah.
You know? So we have to start pushing out past BC. So that, I mean, we started pushing into Ontario earlier on, landed some clients in Alberta, and then went south.
Yeah.
Right? Because you just had to.
Well, I mean, that's the great thing about being an online business, or having that history in web design, you can work for anybody worldwide.
That's right. Yeah, it's totally. Like, we've got a fair number of clients we've never met, and probably never will. And it's a little weird, but, you know, we're making it work. We rely on them for their knowledge of their local market.
Yeah.
You know, if they're launching a new beer in a certain category, you know, we get them and their sales reps are just like, okay, what are we competing against? You know, what are you going to be? Who do you have to fight against here, right? And then you design literally with those other beers on the monitor with you at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems to be working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So next up, we've got the Stiff Job from Souk Oceanside Brewing, a pale ale here. What do we got? 5.3% alcohol. And no listing of IBUs, but I imagine, being a pale ale, we're looking in that 20 to 40 range.
I would assume, yeah.
But actually, when I was at the liquor store today, the clerk mentioned this label.
Oh, very nice.
And she said that these very are nice. Her favorite, the Souk Oceanside Brewing labels are her favorite beer labels.
Excellent.
And I love the color scheme on them. I think that color scheme is fantastic. I love kind of the old school boxing glove, boxing poster thing you got going on this one.
So I'm glad you picked up on the color scheme thing, because that's something we did with SOB that we've never done with any other brewery, and I don't see it very often, is a very restrictive color palette.
Yes.
Right? All their labels use the exact same color palette.
Yeah.
And it's like I said, something you don't see. It requires a fair amount of focus and consistency. You know, like a dedication. Sorry, that's what I mean. But when you see a whole row of them together on a shelf or on a cooler,
Really,
really stands out.
And you know that's the same brewery.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we call that brand blocking.
Yes.
You create that. And for a startup, it's super important. I'm not saying every startup should use a restrictive color scheme that's the same on all their labels, but that brand blocking on a shelf is super important when you're trying to build a brand from the beginning.
No, absolutely. And the orange and navy just pops.
It pops so good. Yeah. The boxing thing came from the owner, Brian.
Okay.
Who has, so he was a chef before he started the brewery, like killer chef. Like five-star New York kind of chef.
Okay.
And then was working out on the West Coast here, which is where he's from, I believe. And I can't remember. He's got a history of boxers in his family. Gotcha. I can't remember if he boxed as well. Sorry, Ryan, if you're listening. I can't remember. It's been a while. But that's where that aesthetic came from. He filled out our intake survey that we use when we work with new clients of just trying to get everything out of their heads and down onto paper.
Yeah.
And that was something that we picked up on, like, oh, that's good. We can use that, you know? So, And they are doing well right now. Mm-hmm. They've done an expansion into a new brewing facility.
Oh, that's off-site. Awesome.
They're selling in Vancouver now.
Yeah.
Which is great. So that was a new push for them as well.
Oh, awesome.
And
so I got to say, their Renfrew Red Ale, that is one of my favorite red ales in BC. I can't think of one that beats it off the top of my head, but
I miss red ales so much.
Oh, red ales and brown ales, man. Like,
oh, really?
They're not sexy,
I never really got the brown ale thing, but the red ales, I miss them.
When a red ale is done right. Like,
they're not super sexy. They're not super trendy. A lot of people aren't doing them anymore, but like red ales and also ESBs I miss as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
But this is very nice. Yeah, good little hop bite. Yep. Nothing too overly hoppy, but nice and smooth. Light body, but you're still getting a little bit of maltiness to it.
I love that the liquor store clerk was recommending this to you. That means we're doing our job.
Yeah. No, it's a great little pale ale for sure. And yeah, she was just gushing about the labels. And I was like, actually... Cool. I'm talking to the guy that designed that label, one of the guys from the firm.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, no way. And I was like, yeah, they're from Nanaimo. And she's just like, what?
So this was here in town.
Yeah. It was at the Joe's Liquor, or what's it called? The one by Original Joe's on Old Lucky's? Island. Yes.
Yeah.
Lucky's.
Yeah. Lucky's, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's one of the better shops in town.
Yeah. Been going there quite a bit when I'm traveling out of town. Selection there is unreal.
Yeah, it's pretty good. There's not a lot. We don't get a lot of love in our hometown, which is fine. Like I said, we're super specialized, right?
You're discussing the story of coming up with this design kind of segues nicely into my next question, which was, like, when you get in a new client, like, how are you bringing them in?
Right.
Like, you say you have a survey.
Yeah.
Are people usually pretty detailed about what they want on a label? Or do you get, like, hey, here's the beer, here's the name, just do what you want? Like,
so, that comes later, usually. when we've been working with somebody for a while, that trust gets built up. Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where the brewery can... trust us with that.
Yeah.
You know, just like, hey, here's the beer. Here's maybe a name, maybe not.
Yeah.
You know, like, but when we start working with somebody new, it's usually not quite that smooth right at the beginning.
Yeah.
So that's where that intake survey came in. And it was designed, like I said, to try and get everything out of somebody's head and down on a paper so that we really understand what they're looking for before we start designing something.
Yeah,
rather than trying to figure out what they're looking for while we go through a design process.
Yeah, because then you're doing that shotgun approach.
Exactly. Hey, does this work? Hey, does this work?
Yeah.
And that's not, it's not efficient. It can be super frustrating for clients and for us too. So it's something we've honestly put about 10, we've refined that thing over about 10 years of just trying to find better questions. So it gets people talking about, if it's a startup, right? It gets them talking about what they see in their head for this brewery, what they want to create, the personality of this brand, outside influences that they might want to incorporate, life stories sometimes, you know, like this SOB one, and competitors, like I mentioned before.
Right? Yeah.
Like I find a lot of people who do packaging design kind of design it in a vacuum, it seems like.
Yeah.
Where they don't really even consider competitors, let alone how it looks on a shelf, to me, it's just crazy.
Yeah, because if you're designing something that's in vogue or whatever, and every other brewery is doing the same design, your stuff's not going to pop.
Bingo. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you go into this saying, okay, we need this new IPA to compete with these five other ones.
Yeah.
You know, and you line them all up, and then you take a design that we create and throw that mock-up into the lineup.
Yeah.
Suddenly the conversation becomes much more strategic. It kind of moves it away from personal aesthetics and more towards strategic choice. Like, oh, I see why you guys did that. As opposed to like, well, I don't really like blue.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Everybody's doing minimalist. We should do minimalist.
Yes.
Things like that.
Things like that. Which, you know, it's a way to stand out. The minimalism can work.
Yeah.
But it's harder than most people think.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's this very fine line between good design and generic design.
Yep. Yep.
Especially when you're in minimalism and that.
Yeah. It's so much harder than people think.
Yeah.
And that actually is, when we do have clients asking for something really minimal, it can kind of mess with the whole conversation about budget. Because, you know, people who don't really know, they're just like, oh, it's just super simple. It should be really quick. It should
it's
be
two
easy.
Colors.
Just bang it out. Yeah. Like, it's two colors. Like, yeah, but it takes actually it's just as much time as some crazy illustration for a different client, right? So,
of course.
Yeah.
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 And I mean, if coming from kind of a creative background and knowing graphic designers, the simpler you, or the more restrictions you put in place, really the more complicated you're making the job when it comes to design choices and that kind of thing, I find. Or
I don't know if I agree necessarily.
No?
You can get to a point where there's so many restrictions that you're just, your hands are tied and there's nothing to do. Absolutely. Yeah. But the absolute blank canvas, gloves are off, do whatever you want project can also be
fair enough.
Pretty brutal.
Yeah.
You know, like, give us a few restrictions, you know, point us in a direction or I shouldn't say point us in a direction, but just like, I don't know. Sometimes that blank canvas with no restrictions on is terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Lay some stuff out on the field or something at least.
Right, something.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Going back to history of the company, 2016.
Oh, that was an eventful year for us.
Yes.
Oh man, 2016 was a crazy year.
Yeah.
For the company and also myself personally, like it was, I'm trying to remember the order of what happened there, but the first thing was at the end of March, the building that our studio was in burned to the ground.
Yes.
So that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, bought my first house, had my third kid, and then Trump got elected. And so it was like those kind of four moments really defined that year for
yes,
me.
Yes, of course.
That first one is probably what we want to focus the most time on here.
That's what I was hinting at.
Right. So we had a studio.
I mean, that the end of 2016 in November was bad for everybody. We don't need to talk about that.
No. So that would have been March 31st. 2016.
Yes.
We had a studio in the second floor of an old building, like a heritage building downtown Nanaimo, right on the main drag there. If any of you guys remember Acme Restaurant, it was just in that same complex.
I have a friend who, I can't remember if he worked or was living kind of down the block.
Oh, yeah.
But he posted pictures the day it went up.
Yeah.
And about two tweets after he put his picture up, I saw from you guys, well, and it was just like, oh, yeah. That's the bad kind of small world.
Yeah, right? Tell me about it. So apparently there was a bathroom ceiling fan on one of the first floor suites caught fire, and there was one of those drop ceilings. And it's the fire spread through the drop ceiling, like kind of horizontally through the building, and the whole building was toast. So we had a lot of our lives in that space.
Yes.
Obviously, all of our stuff.
Yeah.
All of our, you know, stuff we needed to our job, all the computers. All
your computers,
the
tablets.
But also quite a banging library that we'd amassed over the years.
Portfolios.
A portfolio of all of our actual
hard drives,
stuff,
I'm sure.
And a nice collection of mid-century modern furniture that we had amassed as well for like couches and bookshelves and lamps and all this stuff before it really kind of got more popular here in Nanaimo.
Yeah.
But it was cheaper and used, right?
Yeah.
So we lost all that kind of in the space of a few hours. And thankfully, we had been working with a business coach in the year before that, or a couple years before that, and he advised us to get all of our files backed up into the cloud automatically every night. So,
nice.
Yeah, oh, I could have kissed him for that.
Yeah.
I hope
you at least bought him. I hope you at least bought him some beers or something. For
yeah.
That.
Right. So we lost like a week's worth of work. So that part was good.
That probably saved your business.
That plus another thing did. Plus two other things, I would say. There were three things combined in that week after the fire that saved our business. So it was the backups. We found a new office space to rent just within a couple days.
Oh, wow.
And it happened to be furnished.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was like an old law firm, a small one, in like a heritage house. So it was had a like a weird heritage house / small lawyer firm vibe, but it worked at the time, right? Yeah,
I mean, and for my job, I've been retrofitting all those types of buildings for TELUS fiber optics, so I've been dealing with a ton of different buildings like that, so cool. I know.
Heck, you might even been in that one.
I might have.
So that was the second thing, and then the third thing was one of our retainer clients, and we don't do a lot of retainer work, but we had a retainer contract at that time, phoned us up the next day, and they were just like, hey, instead of monthly payments throughout the rest of the year, do you guys want all that money right now? And it was oh, yes, please, I do. So we were up and running 10 days after the fire, fully set up, new office, new hardware.
Holy shit.
Yeah. 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 Because as it turned out, the insurance thing was a nightmare.
No way. I don't believe that.
Well, especially because... couple weeks, I think 2 or 3 weeks after that fire was the Fort McMurray fires.
Oh, yeah.
And so the Western Canadian insurance industry was just knotted right up. And
yeah.
It took us, I don't remember, 8 months or something to get paid out on our business insurance.
Jeez.
Yeah. So if we'd been relying on that to survive, we would not have.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was weird, man. Lost a lot of stuff. Sucked.
Yeah, I bet.
And just like personal stuff that you just take to work.
Yeah.
Like, my dad died a few years before that, and I somehow wound up with a propeller off of his little airplane that he had. And I didn't have room for it home, so I took it to the office. That's gone, you know? And Richard lost a bunch of stuff, and like... But, I don't know. It's just stuff.
Yeah.
You just move on.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say about that.
No, I mean, I think I speak for a lot of people when I say I'm glad you guys survived it, because...
Yeah, me too.
You know, a lot of us from afar were pretty worried about it when we saw what was going on, but...
Yeah.
Man, some of the work you've been pumping out since then, like, it's been great.
It's been good. Yeah, I agree. I'm glad that's not what did us in.
Yeah, for sure. On a happier note,
yes, go on.
Yeah, let's move on from the downer conversation. But I mean, you know, it's something in your history that we want to bring up, right? So, for you, labels that you guys have designed, do you have any favorites that kind of stand out for you, or you know, am I trying to ask you to pick your favorite child right now? Or
no, I know which one of my kids is my favorite.
As a parent, we all do.
Yeah, right?
We'll never say, but we know.
No, I tell the other two all the time.
I only have two, so I can't play that game.
Oh, yeah. No, you just change the favorite all the time.
Oh, they're not old enough to know. So.
Okay. You'll get there. Favorite labels that came out of our shop, man, I really like, there was a dark sour that we did for Driftwood called Obscuritus.
Yeah.
With an owl.
Yes.
That one stuck with me for a long time.
That label was fantastic.
It just stared at you from across a liquor store. It's mm-hmm. like, hey, come here, pick me up. What else, man? There's been so many. I really liked an absinthe label that we did for a distiller here in town called Arbutus.
Yeah.
Absinthe is called Baba Yaga.
Okay, yeah.
And it's based on this, like, Middle Eastern mythological character. Old witch lady lived in the woods. She had a little hut built up on, like, chicken legs. Or a fence made out of chicken legs.
Yes, yeah.
And she could either really help you out or really mess with you, depending on what kind of mood she was in.
Yep.
Which is good, you know, a good metaphor for absinthe.
Oh, absolutely.
That one's got a cool, a really cool thing in that Richard did with the, it, so it's a bottle, but it's tucked inside a sleeve, almost like a bag that wraps around it.
Okay, yeah.
And it just looks like trees, like without leaves on them, just growing up the side of it. But when you flip it over, there's skulls in the negative space in the tree branches.
Oh, nice.
That most people don't see. Like, I love those little details. Gosh, I don't know. Other favorites. Like, it's tough.
Yeah, working off of that, are there little kind of Easter eggs and stuff that you hide inside of labels that maybe people don't know about?
Yeah, there's some of that stuff for sure. We're doing, actually, it's funny you mentioned that, we're doing a full sweep of all the Lighthouse stuff right now.
Yeah, the Race Rocks and the Shipwreck have been announced.
That's right, yep.
And both of those look awesome. Yeah, they're banging. I love those.
They're fun. Yeah. But there is one little detail in all of those labels that gets carried through each.
Oh, nice.
Each of the beers. Yeah. Through the whole thing, actually, which is kind of neat. We've never really done that before.
Yeah.
So I'll leave that up. I'm not supposed to talk about that stuff yet. Yeah. They're not really out yet, but I'll leave that up to people to look for when they come out.
Yeah, just a little hint.
Yeah. Like, Yeah.
Look for something, but we won't say what.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's awesome. It's not hitting that deep on those ones.
Like, yeah,
people but will, it's... they'll get it for sure. What else? Other little messages or hidden stuff? Yeah, there's a bit in there. I don't know.
Can't give away too much.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You want to do one more?
Sure. Yeah, we can do one more.
What are you feeling like?
What do we got again?
I've got Crooked Coast.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's, since we're going
back. Give her a send off.
Yeah.
All right. I can't even remember the last time I had one of these, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I love an alt beer. But again, another style that's fantastic style, but it's not sexy.
No. But the people who like it really like it.
Oh, yeah. Like I think it's better as a seasonal than a year-round, but here, I'll let you take the first.
Oh, man, this is such a weird label.
Yeah.
This was one of those ones where Driftwood said, do whatever you want. Yeah. We have no idea what to do with this. and it came out pretty weird.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Yeah, you got the little, like, what's the word? Like pan or
yep, kind of like the pan deity, and then the seance happening in the middle.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Anyways, to reiterate, we're drinking the Crooked Coast Alt beer from Driftwood Brewing. Uh, 5% ABV. I'm sure there's IBUs on here somewhere, but we're in a dark hotel room that I can't read, so.
And I don't think Crooked Coast is going to be around much longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Times change, you know.
Alt beers are kind of better as seasonals than year-rounders, so.
It may be. You see so few of them from BC that it's even hard to gauge that.
I mean, I can't even think of too many alt beers. I mean, I know Dones did one.
That's right, yeah.
Which was fantastic.
Yes, it was. Can't think of a lot more. I mean, I know there's a couple.
I've seen a couple pop up as seasonals, but
yep.
Nothing that stands out in my mind.
No.
But
this is super chill.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it takes me back.
Yeah. Malty, a little bit spicy.
Yep. Just a bit.
It's just a good fall beer.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of nice this time of year.
Yeah. We're leading into fall now, and days are getting a little cooler, darker a little sooner. But I guess next question, kind of looking into the future, are there any kind of clients or businesses that you would love to work with, or kind of, or even like people that are in the industry that you're like, oh, they do this design that I really love and would kind of, you know, your white whales?
Oh, man. Like, specific breweries.
Doesn't
oh.
have to be specific, unless you want it to be, but...
It's weird. Like, what, when you look at breweries and their designs, and you think, oh, man, this brewery here in Chicago or whatever.
Yeah.
They'd be great for us. Like, their stuff's so cool and weird. Like, and then you actually try and think that through and figure out how yeah. you would ever approach them. And I've done some of that. And you're just like, hey, we really like your stuff.
Yeah.
Do you need a guy? Like, no, we got a guy. That's why you like our stuff. Yeah. We're like, oh yeah. Oh, right. Good point.
Imagine that's a little bit awkward to
right.
be like.
So if your guy ever gets hit by a bus, give yeah. me a call. Like, I got a few of those. For sure.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been a few contracts that we have bid on in the past that we did not wind up winning that I would have loved
yeah.
to do. Like, just this past year, Funky Buddha out of yeah. the States. I don't know if you know their yeah. stuff. I thought that could have been a really good fit, but they wound up going with somebody a little closer to home. Which is something we struggle to overcome a bit.
Yeah, know? I'm sure. Yeah.
It, in an industry where so much emphasis is placed on
local
everything,
yeah.
right? Like, it's a bit of a stretch to ask somebody to hire a design firm from another country,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, this design firm that's on an island
right?
on the west coast of Canada.
And you're aware, like,
yeah.
yeah. You know, there's stuff like that. But there's ones that... I'm actually talking to right now as potential clients, and I don't want to jinx that.
So no,
I'm
of not course, even
gonna,
yeah.
Not even going to bring that up.
No, that's fine. But
I don't know. We're looking for. Honestly, I'd love somebody kind of like Driftwood, but in the States, in a different market where it's completely separate. Not that I want to do two breweries that are the same, but just somebody who's like lets us just turn it up to 11.
Yeah.
You know, and just lets us go as crazy as we possibly can with this stuff.
Yeah.
Because I don't even feel like we've scratched the surface yet.
Nice.
There's so much further that we could take this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. More specifically, I think regional breweries are a pretty good fit for us. You know, people distributing in multiple provinces, that kind of size really seems to work pretty well for us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then also people in markets that we haven't worked in, you know, like working with somebody in a new market. Like we've got one client in Chicago that we've been working with for a few years now, like 4 years, I think.
Okay.
And it's great because it opens us up to breweries and that they compete with that we normally wouldn't have been paying as much attention to.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I just, like we mentioned earlier, I just did a talk for the California Craft Brewers Association.
Yeah.
Just a couple days ago. And I'd really love to work with a couple California breweries. You know, we've had a couple approaches over the years, but they just haven't worked out.
Yeah.
We have actually done a lot of wine work down there with humongous wine companies.
Yeah.
Like bafflingly, like second and third biggest wine companies in the world, where they kind of use us as like an idea generator.
Yeah.
They're like, we got 80 people on our in-house creative team, but... they can't come up with anything weird and new.
Yeah.
Can you guys do that? Like, yeah, we can do that.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Weird and new?
Weird and new? Yes.
You came to the right guys.
They help you. And then they love it, and then it gets focus grouped to death.
Yeah, of course.
And then, but, you know, we get paid, so it's good, yeah. I guess. But I'd love to get some breweries, you know, in California.
Yeah.
Just don't have any of those yet. You know, Texas. I'd love to work with some breweries down there.
Yeah.
More on the East Coast, too.
Yeah.
That was another one that I was scheduled to do in March was the New York Craft Brewers Conference. And that got, of course, canceled, like everything in my life. That,
yeah.
In those couple of months. Yeah. I don't know if that answered the question. But
no, that's... it's,
yeah.
I know it was kind of a very specific question that was very hard to answer. But,
oh, you got the rambling answer.
Along the same vein, though... Mm-hmm. Is there anybody whose work that is in this industry or maybe a different industry that you guys kind of look up to or like kind of go, they're doing something cool.
Yeah.
And like all art is inspired by outside influences, of course. Totally. So like, is there anybody that you're like, man, if we can be anywhere as cool as that, then.
Yeah, there's for years. We've been paying attention to this shop out of London called Stranger and Stranger, and they do work with the alcohol industry. They're a lot more on the spirits side of thing and wine, not as much on the beer side. They do some just amazing stuff and have over the years just... Every time you open Instagram, it just blows your hair back. Like it,
nice.
Yeah. They've got, they're like a offices in New York and San Francisco as well. Yeah. And, you know, there's like a little ahead of where, you know, different than we are, right? But they're somebody that we've looked at for years and really appreciated that stuff. And I've actually got a kind of a relationship going over the years with that guy, a very casual relationship, just talking to the owner and like, hey, what do you do about this? And, you know, he'll send us stuff where he thinks we might be a better fit for it and that sort of thing. So they're one shop. In terms of another, I don't know, there's other companies where I see occasional projects come out where I'm really impressed. But overall, a lot of their stuff is pretty middle of the road.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if I want to get into names on that stuff, right?
Cause it's like, we don't have that.
But honestly, like, no. The answer is kind of no.
Fair enough.
I don't know. That sounds lame and maybe arrogant. I don't know. It just, I don't know. We try not to pay too much attention to that stuff because, you know, if you're reading the same books everybody else is reading, you got the same ideas everybody else has.
Right? Yeah, no, so that's...
Try and look outside of this world, or outside of our little niche to try and, you know, come up with new things to bring into it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, like, Sun in the Morning, like we talked about, has those metal influences. So, heavy. Like, are you looking at, like, metal album artwork
and
kind of stuff? And, like...
Right, so, Richard, like... Or my business partner there, huge metalhead, has been ever since I've known him. He is deeply immersed in that world and will forever be. And is aching so bad to bring that stuff into craft beer whenever he can, right?
And he'll do it whether I have to drag you kicking and screaming. Or...
Well, no, I mean, he's a realist. He knows that, like... You know, some beer labels are just not appropriate for the... Like, some clients... You can't bring that kind of stuff into a brewery where the owners and the people who brew and the people who sell, none of them like metal and they just, that's not their thing, right? Yeah.
No, of course.
You got to line it up with, line the design.
You have to meet the client's needs.
Yeah.
And desires.
Thank you. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah.
If they can't stand behind the design, right? And like sales reps, especially, these guys are going into new accounts. Trying to get new accounts, give them the same spiel over and over and over again. If it doesn't come off ringing true, then we're not doing our job.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But yeah, if he...
If the right brewery comes along the right...
There's one... There's this little teeny tiny brewery in the UK called Black Metal Brewing Company. If they ever... We've talked to them and we're just like, hey, we'd really like to work with you. And they're like, hey, we have no money. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah. But if you ever do.
That's kind of where I'm at too, because I'm doing home brewing. And if one day I can get something off the ground where it's just super niche, small batch stuff. Name I've coined is Nihilist Brewing.
Nice.
And just... do black metal, just you can't read it because it's all that's my dream, man.
I know a guy. I got a guy for that.
If I ever win the lottery, man.
Nice.
Then I could just do that boutique small batch stuff and it's like you come to the brewery and get it. If it's out, it's out.
Yep. Totally. That's fun.
Yeah,
there's other breweries like that in the States where you're
Oh,
man, I could have fun with that brand.
Oh, Three Floyds.
Three Floyds is a perfect example.
Oh, man.
Yep. Or even like, I'm gapping on the name. The one in Seattle with the super clean white brewery and they play metal really loud and their beers are... amazing.
I know you're talking about Clubbers.
No. Oh, that's gonna bug me.
I know who you're talking about though. It's been I haven't crossed the border since 2016 for reasons, but that's probably why I can't think of it. But
I'll think of it as soon as we shut this recorder off.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. But, you know, that would be fun. Or there's one that I can't pronounce. I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce the name right. Ardoit Theory?
Adroit?
Adroit Theory? I don't know how to pronounce it. No. Never had their beers, just looked at their stuff online and like, oh, that's interesting. We could do that. Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Anyway. Yeah, fair enough.
But I don't know. I'm painting a picture here of us only wanting to do metal stuff, and that's not accurate either, right? Like,
no, of course not. Because as soon as you put yourself into that corner, like, the list of clients is just chopped into bits, right?
Yeah, so. we took a niche and just super ultra niched.
You niched your niche.
We might have niched a little too far there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, regional breweries in different markets. Anyway,
yeah.
Don't need to repeat it.
Yeah, and redesigns seem to be kind of like redesigns as far as you took an existing brand and kind of upscaled it has been a good business model for you guys as well.
It has. And yeah, I mean, our business with beer is split between startups and established breweries that need to get a refresh or a complete rebrand.
Yep.
And both of those kinds of projects have their appeal, you know, like starting from fresh with a startup brewery is pretty fun.
Oh, of course.
It's a blank slate in a good way usually.
Yeah.
But the rebrands are also fun for a different reason, and that is you can measure the performance of a new design.
Yes.
From a before and after thing, right? Yeah. You know, like we've had projects where a year after their launch, the breweries are up 25% in sales, you know, like that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's awesome for both parties.
Yep.
Right? Like, it's awesome for them because obviously they're growing.
Well, they're seeing the return on investment.
And they're seeing the return on their investment, right?
And for you guys, it's like, hey, here's our portfolio. Here's proof it works.
Bingo.
Bam.
Yeah. And it took me many years to get to a point where I had those numbers.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But just to kind of run down a list of rebrands off the top of my head, we've got Driftwood,
yep,
Mill Street,
yep,
Bowen Island,
yep,
Lighthouse Now. I know there's a couple I'm blanking on.
Yeah, it must be, and I'm blanking a little bit too.
Old Abbey.
Yeah, that's another one.
That's my hometown there.
Oh yeah, right. Nice. I don't think I would really call Longwood a rebrand, you know, because of the way that
they weren't packaging before you kind of got with them, right?
Yeah, exactly. We did one for Pacific Western called Scandal, speaking of metal.
Yeah. I remember seeing those floating around.
So the old ones were in like the little stubby bottles.
Yeah, the stubbies, yeah.
So they're all in cans now, and I particularly like their lager, actually. It's quite nice. That's in terms of.
Those are the big name ones. Big name ones. For locally.
Yeah. Locally, yeah.
Well, in Mill Street's Ontario.
Mill Street's in Toronto, yeah, but they're a national brand.
Yeah.
So they're all over the place, yeah. Yeah. And they're, yes, Anheuser-Busch now owns them. So, you know, that was interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it was.
Yeah. We were working with them before that happened and somehow managed to survive the transition after they were acquired. And then got the chance to redo some of their huge flagships, so it was pretty cool.
So you sold out, man.
Yep, sold out. Checks didn't bounce.
Hey, man,
bounce.
A paycheck's so, a paycheck.
Yeah. It's weird to observe that their transition from the outside or any brewery's transition.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's a whole other podcast.
Trust me, we've discussed it a couple times, so it's nothing new.
Yeah.
And there's been some pretty hot takes, as I'm sure you're not surprised to hear.
Nope, so. I'm not. I might have a couple myself, but I might keep them to myself.
Yeah, that's usually the safer way to go. Especially when you're the sales guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think that's kind of everything I had for questions and everything. Is there any projects or anything that you have on the radar that you're allowed to talk about, or is it all pretty hush-hush?
Well, I don't know. I try and not talk about things that haven't happened yet.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's actually something I learned from Jason at Driftwood.
Yeah. Because the minute you say something, then it goes off the rails.
And it just doesn't... Like, I remember we wanted to get the word out about the work we were doing with them early on in the project. He's like, well, let's just wait.
Yeah.
Let's just wait a bit. And I was like, come on. He's like, no, let's wait till it's out.
Let's just hold on.
Let's just wait till it's out and then talk about it when it's done. Mm-hmm. Instead of telegraphing to people what you're... Or not telegraphing, but like talking about things that you're going to do or that you are doing. As opposed to like things that you did do. And I kind of took that to heart from him, so...
No, for sure, because it's show me, don't tell me.
Show me something that actually happened.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of something that, like you said, you get into it and, oh, crap, this goes sideways. Oh, crap, I went public with that. Yeah. You know,
it's I said this was going to happen, and then the check bounced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Or the studio caught fire.
Right, what are the chances?
Not to bring that up again, but.
Right. So, yeah, maybe we'll just leave it where it is.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Cool.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time I've been on a podcast.
Oh, there you go. Pacific Beer Chat, first, nice. First interview here. So, cheers.
Cheers to you.
And thanks to all our Patreon supporters. So I think we got Steve and Indie Craft Beer Show. And if anybody else has jumped on since then, I haven't been told. So... Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.